Good morning. All right, I'm going to do some maneuvering up here. Whoops. Oh. Almost got scared. See if I can bring the mouse up here where I can see it. All right. As mentioned, my name is Kim Coleman, and I am from Georgia Southern University. I'm actually a joint appointed professor, assistant professor with the College of Health and Human Sciences, where I'm in the Department of Health and Kinesiology, and also with the Jingping Su College of Public Health. We actually have, I want to recognize my other co-authors. One here is Ms. Erica Hunter, who actually is one of our undergraduates in our program, and then also my other co-author, Dr. Kathleen Welshimer of Southern Illinois University, Carbondale, who could not be here, but I do want to acknowledge both of them. As requested by APHA, I have no relationships to disclose. So let's get started. A lot of us here know a lot about the Black Church. We know that it has been and still is an integral part of African-American culture and part of our social support system. And for some of us, it really is a connection to our livelihood within the communities in which we live, work, and serve. It has for a long time been established as an agency of social control where persons could actually learn and develop skills around economic development, education, improving of education, also engaging in political advocacy. And it also has served as a leadership ground for men and women for decades, where especially early on, we go back to the very early Black church, where you actually saw people who, because of slavery, could not hold leadership or learn leadership skills under that particular state of being. However, when they got in the church, it was a place where they could actually develop those skills and they actually held positions of leadership. And so we know that it is actually a very integral part. I'm not going to go into a long litany of the statistics related to HIV/AIDS because we know that HIV/AIDS among the African-American population in this country is skyrocketing. There is a definite disparity. We're seeing increases in incidence rates, prevalence rates. We know that among routes of transmission, that if you look at overall African Americans, we know that unprotected sexual contact is top. If we look at women, we know that it's unprotected heterosexual sex. And if we look at men, we know that we're dealing primarily with a mix between unprotected homosexual sex and intravenous drug use. And also, we know that African Americans are dying more often. Some of that is connected to testing issues, not going to get tested, not knowing one's status, or finding out one's status late in the game, or by the time they've actually developed or progressed from actually just being HIV positive to actually living with AIDS. We also know that there are a number of health inequities and social determinants that are also related to this epidemic within this particular community of African Americans. We have, as I just talked about, testing issues, access to testing, stigma around testing. We have a lot of people who often will go get tested, but then do they actually go back and get their results? Because getting tested and not actually knowing one's status kind of negates the whole purpose of going to get tested. We also have problems with comorbid STD or STIs, where you have persons who are already infected with infections or diseases like gonorrhea and syphilis, which means that they're engaging in unprotected sexual behavior and are then putting themselves more at risk. And so oftentimes what's diagnosed may be the initial STD or STI and the HIV or AIDS status is not taken a look at. And then we also know that poverty has a huge correlation with some of the social determinants associated with HIV/AIDS in the African community. And that's something that I don't know if many people have gone and looked at, both the documentary Unnatural Causes, but we know where you live and what types of access you have to healthcare does make a difference, okay, even over and beyond things like education and income. There are some historical barriers that I want to mention. We know that there's been a long history of mistreatment and unethical practices against persons of color, specifically African Americans in this country. And it started way back with ancient scientists like Plato, Aristotle, Galen, and Paracelsus, where they actually came out openly and said that persons of African descent were not human beings. They were less than. And this continued to be promoted within the medical establishment with our early pioneers within the medical profession. We all know about Sir Francis Galton, who's the father of eugenics, who made it very clear also, based on a lot of the influences from some of those ancient scientists, that African Americans or persons that were of African descent were less than a real person or a whole person. Goes into some of the other more well-known mistreatments. When we look at African Americans and health-related practices, the father, so-called father of obstetrics and gynecology, Marion J. Sims, who often, there's a picture up here, I don't have a pointer with me, but if you look at that picture up there, that's a very well-known picture. Marion J. Sims is actually in that black coat, and this is a picture of a slave that he was getting ready to actually practice his techniques, his gynecological techniques. And he did this very often using slaves and also using Native Americans without any anesthesia, all right, maiming women for life for this process of advancing the medical profession. But women suffered, and specifically a lot of African American women suffered. And then we all know about Tuskegee and the atrocities, this long-term study that really was unethical and used African Americans as guinea pigs, and still has an impact on how African Americans actually view research, in some cases health communities, and then specifically with respect to this presentation, how they view HIV/AIDS and some of the myths and misconceptions around HIV/AIDS. We know that beliefs have been shared publicly by community members. Minister Louis Farrakhan came out several years ago and said that he publicly said that he believed that HIV/AIDS was an agent of the government to eradicate and to kill off persons of African descent. There have been articles in a number of mainstream media. There have been articles in Essence, Vibe, Ebony, Jet, you name it, it's been out there. And a lot of them deal with this whole issue of the myths and the misconceptions, and then also the truths related to HIV/AIDS. We know that there has been attention by peer-reviewed literature. I'm just highlighting two. This is a very old, it's a 1997 supplemental issue that was done by the Journal of Health Education before it became the American Journal of Health Ed. But they have had, and I'm just mentioning just two here, but they've had special issues to address AIDS and minority populations. Some of you 2 years ago may remember the 25th anniversary commemorative. Oh, there it is. I don't know. It's dim. Don't worry. Issue that the American Journal of Public Health put out to actually look at where we came from and where we currently were at that time with respect to HIV/AIDS. All of these barriers, these historic barriers, really continue to put forth this whole legacy of a group being persons of African descent, specifically African Americans, that feel marginalized and victimized by the dominant society. And this has a real impact when we try to do work around HIV/AIDS in the community, because even though many people in this room are of African descent, it doesn't matter. We're still seen very often as part of that whole public health kind of a community. And as we know from Tuskegee, we had persons of color who were on that team So it definitely enhances this feeling of victimization. Purpose of the study that I did originally was actually to look at African-American Christians' perceptions of threat, divine beliefs around divine causation, or whether or not God actually causes HIV/AIDS, and some normative attitudes related to actually participating in HIV/AIDS ministry participation. And I also looked at how these relationships were influenced by perceived efficacy and religious motivational orientation, which I actually talked about in a previous presentation. Give you a little idea about the demographics. I actually worked with a total of 6 churches in the metropolitan Washington, D.C. Area. These churches had at least a 75% membership that was African American or of African descent. And we did look at some possible predisposing factors or assess those predisposing factors to see if there were any relationships. Just to give you an idea about the denomination, and you'll see in the slide that denomination, we know that there are more women in the African American church or in church period than men. This was a pretty highly educated group of people, where you had a large majority who actually had at least an associate's degree or higher. So we're not dealing with a group that is quote-unquote uneducated. We also are dealing with a group of people, keep in mind this is the Washington, D.C. area, so out of the 375 people who actually completed the survey, 262 actually indicated that they knew someone, at least one person with HIV/AIDS. And then more specifically, broken down into the specific numbers or percentages of those people. Now, we did have some, if you see, that 8% that's not specified right up here. In analysis, we counted them as at least knowing one person. They didn't write in. There was a spot where you could actually write in how many you knew, and some people just checked, yes, they knew someone, and didn't write in how many people they knew. And you're also dealing with a large percentage who had been tested for HIV. So these were people who really were very aware of what's going on out there. But, you know, we talk about results and empirical data, and the survey provided me that I used provided me with empirical data, but there were some unexpected results, which is what I'm getting to for the purpose of this particular presentation. The survey was actually or spurred people to actually start engaging in dialogue, and they engaged in dialogue with each other. They engaged in dialogue with me. They engaged in dialogue with some of my assistants who were helping me with data collection. They started sharing their knowledge and their attitudes around this epidemic, and they started discussing their involvement or their lack thereof in addressing this particular issue in the African American community. Williams has a wonderful quote, and I'm not going to read it to you, but you have it there, but it talks about the fact that a lot of the myths really are, he's seeing them as contributing factors to the epidemic. One of those myths that came out was that there was a cure in Africa, and I'm sure a lot of us have heard this and have seen this written elsewhere. I had at least 2 people in every church come up to me and say, you know, I heard that there's a cure in Africa, and they're just keeping it from us. Now, the reason behind keeping it from us was what really interested me, because they cited pharmaceutical companies' greed and how, I mean, I had people saying, you know, when you look at vaccines, they were talking about, they talked about having the vaccine trials going on right now, and they said they really don't want to know what's going on, because people don't make money from vaccines. People make money from treatment. And so they believe, that's why they said they believe there's a vaccine already out there. They believe there's a cure. But the thing is, where's the money for the pharmaceutical companies? The money is in actually providing the antiretroviral drugs out there. So I thought that was really something that I had never specifically heard that reason behind it. Also, we've all heard about AIDS being a genocidal weapon. This belief is still out there. And I believe that it is actually having an impact on why people aren't, especially people of color, aren't participating in the numbers that we would like to see in the vaccine trials. They, you know, said that they purposely believe that this is out there, and it's out there to kill people of color, point blank. This was the church. If you know about the church, you know about scripture. And one of the things I heard over and over was people perish for lack of knowledge. And there is research that shows that even though attitudes have become more accepting, knowledge is still very low. I found that in contacting and working with the churches and talking with people, the very basics of HIV, or what I was calling HIV 101, needed to be presented before I could even get people to engage in talking about taking this survey and participating in this study. A lot of the congregants don't really understand or don't know the full extent of how HIV/AIDS is actually impacting our community specifically. They know about the national numbers, but they don't know really how it's affecting our community. And when you break down those statistics and actually put them in, go beyond just giving numbers and really linking it and saying, okay, if we know that approximately 60%+ of all pediatric cases of AIDS are actually being seen in African American children, what does that really mean to you? What does that say to you? And it said to them, oh my gosh, babies are dying. Our next generation is dying. And that then caused the light bulb to go off, if you will. And again, Williams once again says that we've got to promote education. Something that I really didn't expect. I had one Roman Catholic congregation that I went to, and there was an adamant refusal of some of those members to participate. They outwardly told me, we don't believe this, it belongs in the church. Don't believe it. Even though the priest supported it. How am I doing on time? I'm very short. Okay. I don't know why this happened, but this does provide an opportunity for further inquiry. Also, among men who were asked to participate, some participated, and even the ones who didn't, there was this attitude or belief that just by writing out or filling out the survey, they actually were thought to believe to be on the DL or thought to be homosexual. And I thought that was, I said, wow, just by filling out. You can see that we didn't have a large number of male participants. That didn't mean that I didn't have a lot more who were there. And so it goes back to drawing some attention to the stigma or the perception about homosexuality. So very quickly, I'm going to go through where we go from here. One of the things we need to do as public health professionals is we need to actually go back and assess ourselves on a regular basis. We need to acknowledge our own biases. I went to a workshop 2 years ago that was sponsored by Emory, who's participating in the vaccine trial. And when health professionals got together, we said, you know, as a professional, absolutely, we believe that people ought to be participating 100%. But if you ask me as a person, am I going to do it? No, I'm not. And why? Because I don't trust the government. I'm just being honest. I don't. So we need to acknowledge the biases. You need to know what you don't know. And if once you identify what you don't know, you need to try and find out the answer. And then measure yourself against the cultural proficiency continuum. And I don't know how many people are familiar with this, but we talk a lot about cultural sensitivity and cultural competence. But cultural proficiency is where we ought to be striving to get, or even to cultural humility, meaning that we actually spend some time so that we become experts in that culture, even though we are insider outsiders, if you will, to that culture. Jimmett and Hutchinson definitely tell us that we have to be innovative if we're actually going to do something, and we have to involve community leaders. So, first, be prepared. You need to read not only the scientific literature, but pay attention to the mainstream media and see and hear what's going on. If you're working with the Black church, you need to be theologically competent, all right, which means that you may have to do some work. It doesn't mean you have to believe it, but you do have to be competent in that area. We need to respectfully address any truths, lies, and conspiracy theories. I listened to every last one of them. I wrote them all down, and I really wanted to understand what people thought, because there were some things, like I said, I had not heard about. So I was respectful of them. I didn't try to say, oh, no, that's completely, you know. I would say, oh, really? I haven't heard that before. And I was being honest. And then finally, make sure that we actually include the community in our interventions when we're working with HIV/AIDS. As a way to cause some community ownership and also sustainability of these programs in the midst of the myths, the misconceptions, the conspiracy theories, and the truths. There's my contact information. God bless you. And I'm done.
Thank you, Ms. Coleman. At this time, do we have any questions for her? They're actually on the back table.
I did. When you're working with the faith community, you have to remember you have this history early on of people, especially of pastors, saying that it was punishment. Even though a little bit about the survey, we asked a question about whether or not people believe that it was punishment. They didn't believe it was punishment, but they did still believe that God allows HIV/AIDS for engaging in quote unquote sinful behavior. And so I think the message, if you're talking about a positive message through the church, you really need to tie it to scripture and to, you know, love thy neighbor, you know, as yourself, and the fact that we are here to serve, we are here to be God's instrument. Someone said, if you look at who Jesus walked with, he didn't walk with, you know, the kings, the queens, the priests. He hung out with, and this is a paraphrase kind of quote, but with the hoes, the drug dealers, the pimps of that time. And so the people who were left out, looked over and looked over and kind of looked down upon. And so we are also called to do that, or the church is called to do that. So I think if that type of positive message is put forward when you talk about HIV/AIDS, I think that may actually increase motivation to get involved, but also may help in the long run to dispel some of the myths. But I think the myths and those misconceptions are there, and we've got to acknowledge them one way or the other. Yes, sir.
Do you think, from a public health point of view, that we're doing ourselves a disservice by teasing out HIV and AIDS and talking about, not to minimize its importance, but not to talk about it in the broader context of things that may be a little less frightening to people to understand that when we're talking about sexually transmitted infections, mm-hmm. that we are really talking about things like that cause cancer in the cervix, mm-hmm. that cause sterility, that cause, you know, mm-hmm. syphilis and gonorrhea, mm-hmm. chlamydia, and those kinds of things. Are we doing ourselves a disservice by actually using this approach?
That's a really great question. I'll tell you like I tell my students, I don't know. I really don't know. We're so beholden to our funders. And what we get funded for is, are you specifically talking about this health issue? And I think that's where things get a little murky for us. I think that's a great question, and that's something, to be honest, that I'd love to have a dialogue with you about, and anybody else. Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Just to follow up on this question, I think that those of us who are in the HIV/AIDS field and do it on a, you know, day-to-day basis, one of our arguments is that when we start grouping it with other illnesses or are putting it as, you know, maybe under STIs, that folks have a tendency to ignore HIV because of the stigma that's layered, you know, multiple layers of stigma that are associated with HIV. Mm-hmm. But also as a, you know, as a message, as a way to get the message across, is that you do talk about HIV-related diseases and illnesses. Folks mm-hmm. who are living with HIV deal with cancer, deal with yes. diabetes, deal with high blood mm-hmm. pressure. You know, we know about the rates of other STIs in our young Black population. But I think one of the arguments from those of us who are in the field, that mm-hmm. if we keep including it as part of something else, that's when it gets lost because of the level of stigma.
Okay.
At this time, we have to actually move on because we're running short on time. I do thank you all for your questions and your comments. The discussion has been very intriguing, and her contact information is on the back. I'm sure she'll be staying through the session, so if you have other questions, you can feel free to talk to her afterwards. We'd like to... How do I get back?
Just escape?
Oh, okay. The next presentation is by...